Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, January 26th. And we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast. Finally giving voice to more than 1 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all the crapness that collects in our inner sanctums. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here. You are still here. And this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right. You heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. On last week's show, we spoke to Anne Fonfa from the Annie Appleseed Project, Dr. Devra Davis, Director of the Environmental Oncology Center at the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Center, and author of one of my favorite books, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. Tonight's show is dedicated to bereaved young adult spouses, sort of the elephant in the room of the young adult movement. But first, we'll be speaking with Survivor Spotlight Gail Baker, who's a young adult breast cancer survivor and the author of a great book called Cancer is a Bitch, followed by Matt Herrink, a young adult cancer advocate, bereaved spouse, and founder of the group Young Cancer Spouses, and Anya Cohn-Minton, who herself is a bereaved spouse, a young adult cancer advocate, and her husband is a musician, singer, songwriter, who we will be honoring tonight by playing one of his songs. Posthumously, memorializing him. So, hello, my friends. 903, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show. And a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, our new home on the Internet. Alrighty, coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our brand-new studio in downtown Manhattan, I am your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult survivor of brain cancer. Joining me live in the studio tonight, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Buffard. Hello, Jack.
Good evening, Matthew.
Jack will be monitoring our live, concurrent, interactive chat room, so if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you, he won't. But feel free to ignore him, as most people do, especially the women.
Hey, you know, my mom said I was special in my own way.
And with a new studio comes a new co-host. I don't know if she's on the line yet, but Carol Rosenthal will be joining us soon to take her place on the comfy seats from the Windy City and join the Stupid Cancer Show. So welcome to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay. And the couch is comfy. You see, we're not about the quantity of your life. We're about the quality, too. So welcome to the stupid cancer movement. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. For better or for worse, change comes slowly and only from within. The need to cure cancer for Gen X or Gen Yers, whatever that means, is only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that we're the generation that invented Google, Facebook, Second Life, and kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks. We should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, my friends, and it's our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is what really matters. Are you in? The time is now. It's our time. It's about time. Donna Martin graduates, and now the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
In the news, attention West Coast shoppers. Attention West Coast shoppers. Rise to Action Los Angeles is being held February 7th at the University of Southern California, and I will be there. Rise to Action aims to help young adult cancer survivors and their families explore topics related to their long-term survivorship. Rise to Action also focuses on engaging survivors as advocates for themselves and for other survivors to raise awareness and mobilize for action. For more information and to register for this spectacular event, please go to www.children'scause.org, and I hope to see you there. For those of you who are still stuck in D.C. post-inauguration traffic, the Ullman Cancer Fund for Young Adults is proud to present their Screw Cancer Happy Hour series. Screw Cancer Happy Hour dates for Columbia, Maryland are February 18th and March 18th, and the Baltimore Happy Hours are February 19th and March 19th. For more information, visit ullmanfund.org. That's ULMAN.org. Attention all you ladies who don't talk to me and don't return my calls. The Young Survival and Living Beyond Breast Cancer Coalition's 9th annual conference for young women affected by breast cancer is being held at the Hilton Anatoly in Dallas, Texas, February 27th through March 1st. Don't be afraid to sign up at youngsurvivorsconference.org because I won't be there. Hey, St. Louis, achieving recovery from cancer to health. Childhood Cancer Survivor Retreat Weekend is being held at the Perry Marquette Lodge in Grafton, Illinois, Friday, March 20th through Sunday, March 22nd. Young adult survivors 18 to 30 years old and who are 2 years removed from their treatment may attend this free weekend. For more info and to apply, contact Lisa Matola at area code 314-454-4635 or email Lisa at lmm1321@bjc.org. Can't make a dream. Ovarian Cancer Retreat in Fabulous, Montana is April 30th through May 4th. Refer to campdream.org for more info or call Camp Make a Dream at 406-549-5987. 70K. Is it .org, Matthew?
.org.
.org. 70K.org. That's the word 70K.org. We're up to 5,390 signatures. The importance of this bill is there are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population that I belong to. Cancer Care Program. The young adult groups that are active and running at Cancer Care are Living with Cancer, Inactive Treatment, Life After Cancer, Post-Treatment, Young Adult, Loss of a Parent, Young Women with Breast Cancer, Young Adult Individual Grief Counseling, Young Adult Caregiver for all diagnoses and all relationships. For more information on Cancer Care, contact I2Y friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's J-L-A-R-S-O-N at cancercare.org. Or call Julie at 212-712-6173. Your chief cancer anarchist, being me, Jack Bouffard, will be discussing young adult cancers in studio on Sirius XM Doctor Radio Oncology Show this Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern. Sirius subscribers can tune in to channel 114. XM subscribers, check it out at channel 119 or listen online at Sirius.com. And finally, we have Live On, sperm banking by mail for cancer patients. For information, go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking is made possible by our friends at Fertile Hope. And that is the news.
What time is it?
All right, 9-11.
Oh, Thursday.
It's my pleasure to welcome to the show. A little late,
no,
but we forgive her.
No.
Our brand new co-host, live every week from the Windy City, as an upgrade from our chief cancer oncospondent to the official co-host of the Stupid Cancer Show, the one and only, the beautiful, lovely, and talented Carol Rosenthal. Hey, Carol, how you doing?
I'm great, Mr. Zachary. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to your first official appointment, very Obama-ish of us, to have you as my co-host, and I'm so happy for that.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad to pick up some of the Obama cheer.
Good evening, Carol.
Hey, Jack, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Great. Nice to hear you reading the news this evening.
I'm just glad that I got through it.
You did a splendid job.
We got to give Jack things to do around here.
Yeah, I can't play with paper clips all day.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not, you know, playing with paper clips or fetching about the American Cancer Society, then, yeah, we could toss him a few tasks, I guess, huh?
Anything to keep me out of trouble.
Absolutely. So what's going on in the Windy City besides it being probably 10 degrees colder than it is here in New York?
It's really freaking cold here, so I can't really tell you what's going on because, as you know, I'm a homebody. I sit at home, I write, and I pretend that I live somewhere other than Chicago.
As long as it's not Staten Island, then we're fine.
No, it's not Staten Island.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, we have a Survivor Spotlight tonight, and it was really my pleasure to meet her over the interweb the last couple of days, and we're going to bring her out in a traditional style. I'm going to play the cue music here, and here we go. 9:13 in the Survivor Spotlight tonight. Gail Baker is the author of the recently released and critically acclaimed memoir, Cancer is a Bitch, or I'd Rather Be Having a Midlife Crisis. She's a former columnist for Literary Mama, a freelance essayist, an award-winning short story writer and poet, a health and patient advocate, a professional keynote speaker, a competitive runner, an occasional yoga instructor, mother of three, and a breast cancer survivor. I'm going to go with the fact that she's pretty busy. So please welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, Gail Baker. Hello, Gail.
Hello, Matthew.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, do you hail from Staten Island?
No, I'm not far from Chicago. I'm in Madison, and it is freezing.
We've got you beat, Carol.
You do have me beat.
It is so cold. I'm in my house with a coat on and shivering.
So as a writer from these extremely cold Midland climates, I mean, do you two just stay holed up all day and pretend that the world around you doesn't exist, or is that just me?
No, I think that this climate is actually kind of good for writing, but I alternate that with doing a lot of hot yoga. Have you tried that? It's like 110 degrees in the room.
The Bikram action, huh?
Yes. So, and then I come out shivering from that, but yeah, I think it's a good writing. I think it actually is good because it's less distracting. You know, when it's cold and you kind of curl up and write, so I think it's good
yeah.
for that.
No Bikram for me. My greatest exercise is typing. That's about as far as I go.
Yeah.
Work those knuckles, right.
Yeah, my hands are very strong.
I prefer channel surfing myself.
Hey now. All righty, anyway. Gail, thanks for being on the show. I wanted you to talk a little bit about your story, why you wrote this awesome book, Cancer is a Bitch. And, you know, I think we have a very special announcement because you're going to be somewhere very special next week as well, too.
Yes, I'm heading to New York to meet Dr. Oz next week to be on his radio show. But I...
Settle down. Okay, there we go.
Very excited about that. But I didn't really mean to write this memoir. It was a complete accident. I was a fiction writer, and I had actually just completed a novel that was about a woman who finds a lump in her breast and wonders if she's lived a meaningful life. And I sent that off to my agent, went in a week or two later for my annual mammogram, and was diagnosed with breast cancer. So that set me into a bit of a funk. And I really couldn't, Carol, I couldn't write. I was just kind of curled up. It was January, it was cold, and I just kind of stared out the window, and I would obsessively Google health sites, or I was going to start an organic facial cream company because I figured, you know, here I was this healthy person, so I thought, oh, there's all these toxins. And so I was like, you know, mixing up batches of shea butter and stuff like that and doing all these kind of crazy things and not really being very functional. And my husband pressed a journal in my hand and said, you need to write this down. So I didn't really want to do that because I thought, who would want to read this? But so I thought, okay, I'll just do this so I don't burden the whole world. And, of course, now you can read those words I didn't want to burden anyone with. But the first line that came out was, I'm sitting topless in the oncologist's office on Valentine's Day. Cancer is a bitch. And then after that, it all just kind of flooded out. So that's how I happened to write it. And then left the first agent, was looking for another agent, and had started writing a column. And within a few months, I had a book contract for this book.
All right, you're done. Go home.
Is that it? So anyway, it was very hard to write. I don't even know why. I mean, I'm still kind of wondering. I wrote it. This all happened less than 3 years ago. So I wrote it very raw, and it just wrote it as it happened. And it just kind of, you know, people started, when I had the column on Literary Mama, got a ton of email from people saying, you know, thank you for articulating this. It's very honest and it's very raw, and I think it was a little unusual in that way. It wasn't all pink ribbons and, you know, everything's, you know, I went into a bit of a wallowing in my self-pity before I came back out, and I believe in that.
I'm a strong supporter of that, too. Actually, I think it's really interesting that there seems to be this two ends of the spectrum that people describe, either wallowing in pity or you're out there running a marathon. And I'm like, can we think of a new name for the wallowing in the pity? Because
yeah.
For me, it's just facing reality, you know? Sometimes
exactly.
You suck. You
mm-hmm.
sit there, you deal with it, you're in it, and it's a crappy space in life, and then you move on because everything
exactly.
eventually changes. But, yeah. I don't think
you can come back out until you let yourself go down. I think you have to go down to come back out. And then I had this great girlfriend who literally pulled me out of the house. She stuck my shoes on. She said, we're running a half marathon. So I kind of did both. I did the wallowing, and then I did the running. But I didn't really want to. She just said, put your shoes on. You know, come on, get out of the chair. You're going to come running, and that's what I did.
Did she tie the laces for you, too?
No, but she would have. She would have. She was a good friend.
She also
told me my scar was really hot, so that was really nice to hear.
That's very helpful. I actually have a book coming out soon, too, called Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s. And in my book, I interviewed a woman whose friend also grabbed her by the hand and said, we're going to go do this big cancer walk. You know, she was recovering
yeah.
from breast cancer and was just like, oh, in the house. And so she went and she picked up the shirts. They registered. And
yeah.
Her friend's shirt, you know, just had the name of the race on it. And her shirt said, cancer survivor. And she said to her friend, you're crazy if you think I'm going to walk down the street with a big cancer survivor shirt on, and she refused to go. So there, again, are different ends of the spectrum. You know, the friend who drags you out of your house and gets
right.
you running a marathon, and the friend who drags you out of your house and you run back to your house as fast as you possibly can.
It's all fine. It's all good. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gail, I have to ask, how did you get on Dr. Oz's radar?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I guess what happened is my publicist, you know, sent out my book and my press kit all over the place, and they bit. I mean, it was great. When they called me, I couldn't even believe. I mean, it's really hard to do that. I don't know. Hopefully it's because they read the book. You never know why. I don't know. They just seemed interested. So they call. Then they call and do a pre-interview, and then you have to pass that. You know, it's kind of nerve-wracking. But I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure what the interest was exactly. It just somehow hit them.
Well, maybe the interest is the fact that it, you know, it is really raw and real, and that's something that you don't see a lot of in the cancer world. You're saying it wasn't just the pink ribbons, and I think that really appeals to a lot of people and that we need to see and hear more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some people find the candidness very refreshing, and some people are maybe are a little put off, but I love it when, you know, like I had this woman in San Francisco when I was there, this older woman who came up and threw her arms around me. She must have been in her 70s. She goes, thank you for saying the thing, you know, about the title. She goes, thank you for saying the thing everyone thinks but no one ever wants to say. And I was, you know, I thought, well, yeah, it's exactly what it is. I thought, this, I'm just trying to be honest and not, you know, mince words about it. And I guess some people find that refreshing, so...
Well, the unfortunate thing is that there are so many people now who have cancer, and then the fortunate thing about that is that there are a lot of different kinds of people who have cancer. So, you know, all of us out there with different thoughts and opinions and attitudes, you know, we need our reading material too. So it's great to have a diversity of perspectives for those of us who want the raw and gritty side.
Yeah, and also the kind of the side that says, you know what, I may have this, but I still want to feel sexy. I still want to feel vital, you know, not just kind of giving into it. I think there was something about that that's captured a lot of younger, you know, people with cancer that have written to me. You know, you don't think people think, oh, you're diagnosed, and then you're just thinking about your treatments and your appointments and this and that. I was still thinking about, you know, my old boyfriends and things I didn't do, and some song would come on, you know. I mean, like, there's all that stuff still kind of swirling around, well, for me, in my head. And so I wrote about it all. I just threw it all in there, all the stuff I thought about. So,
well,
I
you
have
know,
a question.
You're an I2Y, you're definitely in the I2Y club.
I've got a question, because you just used this phrase, not just giving into it, and I hear people saying that a lot. Like, I'm not just going to be one of those people who just gives into my cancer. I've actually never met someone who just gives into cancer. I'm not sure what that actually means, but I hear that all the time, and I'm curious for you what that means or what that looks like, giving into cancer.
No,
I don't know that I have an image of that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that, and I didn't mean to say that in any way to think other I didn't and other people did. I think
no, it's a phrase
that
I hear all the time, so I just
I
was asking
people. I think that for me it was that feeling that I was cancer, like cancer was me. You know what I mean? Like it was everything, because it does, it fills up your life. You're going to these appointments there. You're kind of, everything starts revolving around that. And for me, what it did is it kind of screwed with my persona. I had this idea of myself as this, like, youthful, you know, vital, strong. I was always very active. I did all these things. And suddenly I thought, well, can that be me and me diagnosed with cancer? Do you see, like, the two didn't come together in my mind? And I guess partly writing the book was to say, well, yeah, you know what? They did come together. It was like, yeah, this happened to me, but it's not who I am. And it's not going to be my entire life. There's other things that are happening and are going to keep happening, and life goes on. And but I think sometimes I have seen people who they get the diagnosis, and because there's still a bit of a, I think there is sort of a stigma with it, they sometimes go into a bit of hiding, and then that's when it lets, when you're letting it take you over. Do you know what I mean? Where you become this thing, and this concern is, and you know, that it is defining who you are, and you don't like that definition, and also facing people and seeing yourself as their biggest fear. I think part of it is that you become this representation of something that other people fear. And so it's just a very complicated thing. So I know people who kind of just didn't go anywhere, didn't do things because of that. So that's the way, I mean, letting it take over.
Well, I got to interrupt. We're actually out of time. We got to move on to our next guest. But I think that, Gail, we want to have you back on the show. I think these are very compelling conversations. You're now obligated to tell Dr. Oz stupid cancer, of course. We're going to hold your feet to the fire for that. We want to.
Oh, definitely. I'm going to just talk about the stupid cancer show when I'm on.
And nothing else.
Okay.
You're not allowed to talk about anything else. But
okay,
the
that's it.
Show, talk to us.
Book? What book? You didn't just write a book.
Right.
No book. Yeah. But in any case, congratulations on your survivorship from stupid cancer. Good luck with the book. Good luck with Dr. Oz.
Thank you.
Gail, what's your website so people can check it out?
It's GailKonopBaker.com. That's my name.
Gail, how do you pronounce your middle name?
It's Conop.
GailConopBaker.com.
Yes.
Well,
or you could Google cancer as a bitch, and I'm sure it'll come up.
I can't imagine there are too many books out there that would also wedge into that search, so you're probably right.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, good luck to you. Stay warm in Madison, Wisconsin, and take care of yourself.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Congrats on your
thank
book.
You.
All right.
Okay.
Gail Conop-Baker, author of Cancer is a Bitch.
What time is it?
My second guest tonight.
Oh, third day.
His wife was diagnosed with cancer in February of 2005. After 2.5 years, she passed away, sadly, in October of 2007, leaving him a widower and a single father at the age of 35. He's a founding member of a group called Young Cancer Spouses and currently serves as its current president and works towards providing a support network, a much-needed one, I might add, for the significant others of young adults with cancer. He's also on the basic research faculty at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. My pleasure to welcome to the show a very interesting individual, Dr. Matthew Herrink. I think I have to unmute him first, so let me go into the room here. And
it's a lot easier to do the interviews when the guest is unmuted.
Yeah, let me see if I can unmute him here. There you are. Sorry about that. We're working the technology, Matt. Welcome to the show.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me. Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfect, perfect.
All right.
So I just have to add, you know, for all the listeners out there, whenever we have guests on the show, I ask them to send me a really quick segment introduction and just some quick talking points to make the conversation go forward. And, you know, usually it's something pretty simple. Matt sent me 12 pages, including his entire life's history, a curriculum vitae with all of his academic and professional appointments, honors and awards, all the research support, and a bibliography of all the articles he's published in peer-reviewed journals. So
I'm actually on chapter 2 of that right now.
Okay. Yeah.
I just didn't want you to be shocked by it if something came out.
But, yes, congratulations for being extremely thorough. So clearly, the tone of today's show, we're a lighthearted show, but this is clearly a very serious topic that affects numerous tens of thousands of people, and it's kind of the elephant in the room. What do you do? And, you know, it's one thing to pay attention to the caregivers. They don't get enough attention to begin with. But it's another thing when there's someone left over at the end. And what do you do with those people? So clearly it's not okay that Kara passed away from this. But I think what you've chosen to do is really emblematic of how our generation isn't going to take it anymore. And we're really going to do whatever we can to make sure that the next us doesn't have to go through the crap that we went through. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like to be a bereaved spouse, but who was a doctor who works in oncology, who, you know, it's kind of like, you could never really get out of it. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I did cancer research before Kara was ever diagnosed, so it was my life before, and it's also my life after. So during the process, work was kind of an escape for me. I could go and focus on a different aspect of cancer. But I would also read papers, and a lot of the papers end with more research needs to be done. And I just wanted to grab those people who are writing that and just say, if that's the findings of your paper, you need to keep doing the research and publish that. So it's given me a whole different way to look at cancer. And I've really started to focus my research more on things that will have a bigger impact in the clinic, or from what I feel will have a bigger impact in the clinic, and less just basic science stuff. But, of course, we have to have the basic science so we can get to that next level of it. But it was just the hardest thing for me was just I have a PhD in cancer biology, but I couldn't do anything to help her. I've got all this education and learning. I know so much about it, but I was completely lost as soon as I walked into the doctor's office.
And what was she diagnosed with?
It's a neuroendocrine carcinoma of the cervix, so it's very rare and very aggressive.
And was she diagnosed at a late stage?
stage 4B.
Yeah.
So it was metastatic to the brain and the liver when she was diagnosed.
And how old was she?
She was 33 when she died and 31 when she was diagnosed.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so. I mean, belated condolences, of course, but that's the whole point of why there's a young adult movement right now, and you're on a radio show that's all about this. I keep saying to pinch myself, you know, that there's a radio show about young adult cancer. I know Carol had a lot of questions for you. I gave Carol your website and your history, and I sent her the 65-page thesis of your history. And she was very intrigued by this topic, and I'll turn it over to her for a sec.
Okay.
Hey, it's great to talk to you again,
yeah.
Matt.
I'm looking forward to your book.
Thanks. For all of you who are listening, Matt is actually in my book, and we've had some fantastic conversations in the past about his organization and also about your own experiences. And I was wondering if you could sort of paint a little picture for listeners of what your daily life looked like in your household before your wife was diagnosed with cancer, and then kind of fast forward that to now. I think in the cancer conversation, we talk a lot about during treatment and during diagnosis, which is really important. But a part of the conversation that's definitely missing is what happens after a cancer death takes place, and what does that life look like for those of us who are still left behind.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just wonder if you can talk a little bit about your guys' life before cancer came along and what it's looking like now.
It's very different. So before cancer, we were the all-American family, overeducated, living in a great part of town, two kids, go to church every Sunday, visit the family. Family was number one, and we had a pretty good life. But then once the diagnosis came, everything stopped, and all that stuff that you're doing just in your life has to go away because you don't have time for it anymore. And so that all, get rid of the peripheral stuff so we can just focus on taking care of the family, being a caregiver, taking care of the kids. And Kara's parents came down, and they got an apartment nearby, so that helped us tremendously. And it was great to have that constant help, and you always knew who was going to be there helping us. And we had great support from all of our neighbors and our church family, and I don't know how we would have gotten through it without them. And I talked to people who they don't have that support network, and they've just moved to a new town, and I don't know how they're getting through it, not having a massive support network to help them and just step in at any time. But now it's Kara's parents still have the apartment, and it's been in almost a year and a half now. And so I get up, get the kids ready for school. I take my oldest daughter to school and then head into work. And Kara's father will take my son to his school and pick him up afterwards. And then I come home and make dinner and do it all over again. So we're starting to move during the diagnosis, and you've got all the treatments. You really put off a lot of traveling and just trying to visit family and things that you just can't do when you have to stay close to home and close to the hospital. So now we're trying to make up for some of that lost time and just trying to do traveling, visit family when we can, and just have some fun in life. So it's vastly different, and I'm definitely working less, but I'm more focused when I'm working.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a cancer patient, I have heard described these psychological stages that happen when you go through grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And I have to say that for me personally, that has nothing whatsoever to do with what actually happened for me. Those, you know, thank you, Kubler-Ross. Like, I think maybe what she had to write is probably applicable to many, but it just wasn't for me. That wasn't how it went for me. And I'm curious to know what the grieving process has been like for you. Do you feel that you have sort of fit into that pattern as well, or has it been something else for you?
I can see the different stages as I look back on things, but doing what I do, I know a whole lot more than what the public or what I know what the statistics say and I know what they mean. So I was grieving before things ever happened. But in hindsight, I can see each one of those steps. They may not necessarily be in that order, and they may be one may have lasted a few days and others may last for years, but I can see each one of those steps in my life. And so the grieving process is there, and I'm still going through it. And I think I'll be going through it for probably the rest of my life in one form or another. So it's not an easy thing to get through. And the kids keep me going, and they make me get up every morning, which in the beginning, that was after she first passed, it was good that I had them to make me get up every morning, because I could definitely see that there are times I would not have gotten out of bed and I would not have gotten off the couch. But the kids, having kids forces you to get out of bed and to keep moving because they need you. They have to be fed. So, yeah, there is a grieving process that goes along, and I know it's different for everybody, but, yeah, it's definitely there.
Well, I think an important thing that you touched on was that this is a process that might continue throughout your life, and I think that that's something that a lot of people forget when you are a friend or family member of somebody who is a widow or a widower. It's like, you know, it can be in the forefront of your mind for weeks or months, but I think somehow the world carries on with the rest of life and assumes that perhaps you do too. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit, you know, give some advice to listeners of, you know, what is it that you wanted people to do or say that would be most supportive to you? What did you get or what didn't you get? And what do you think people need when they're going through this?
What you can say, one of the best emails I got was just, sorry, Matt, I got nothing. And that was it. It's not the people, you cannot understand me. There are very few people who can understand what I'm going through, and I hope that nobody else can ever has that opportunity to understand what I'm going through, because it was my wife that died. It was the mother of my children that died. And I still, it's been a year and a half now, and I still have a hard time. Our dreams are never going to happen anymore. And I still have a hard time when other people, my friends and family, are having babies and buying houses and getting new jobs. I still have a hard time. I want to be happy for them, but it's a very fine line between being happy for them and needing to leave the room, because I know that my plans for the rest of my life are never going to happen. And so it's a very fine line, but what people can say or do is just look me in the eye, give me the sympathetic look, and that's really about all you can do, because very few people have experienced it. And that's why we have the Young Cancer Spouses, is because my friends don't understand it, and I hope that they never do. And like Anya and Sarah, who are on the boards here, who I've met, I've never talked to Anya before. We've emailed a few times. I've met Sarah one weekend 2 years ago, but we have this connection because we've both been through this thing that very few people can understand.
Well, if I could jump in there for a second, I mean, one of the things that I've discovered in just working with the young adult community and seeing its wellspring over the last 2 years into a maturing social movement is that I would venture to say, at least from my vantage, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with me, that young adult survivors includes bereaved spouses. And yes, I may not ever know what it's like to lose a spouse to cancer, and I would never claim to be, you know, say I know how you feel, but I would never stigmatize you. I would never look at you differently or pigeonhole you or stereotype you. And I've known Anya and I've known Sarah Wenstrand for quite a while now. There are many, many young adult survivors out there who are bereaved spouses. And I think you're part of a larger community than you might think, or maybe you do, that doesn't care what you went through in the sense of pity, but we're here for you.
Well, and yes. I'm sorry, can I interrupt? I mean,
yeah,
I totally agree that we're part of this larger group. But it also breaks down into smaller groups. Like, I have no idea what you went through. I cannot pretend to even imagine what my wife went through.
It was hysterical. It was fabulous.
Yeah, exactly.
I highly recommend it.
Yes, but it's just I cannot imagine what you went through, just as my wife cannot imagine what I have gone through. And so it's like the lung cancer people get together, the breast cancer people get together, because there's that camaraderie of sharing that common experience that – while there's peripheral experiences that are similar, they're not the same.
So looking at you know, this subgroup within the young adults, cancer community. From my own experience, you know, I've spent 5 years researching this book that I'm writing, have written, it's about to come out, about young adult cancer. And for me, there was such little dialogue happening about death, and that the focus was on the survivorship aspect of living. But if we look at the statistics of our age group, about 1 in 4 of us is not going to make it. And I'm wondering whether or not you similarly have had the experience of death not being talked about, or about, you know, surviving the death of a loved one, if that's something that you feel is still a sort of hush-hush issue within the cancer community.
It's when you get to this small, so I ran the numbers with the SEER database and cross-referenced those with the U.S. Public Census Bureau, and I think I sent those numbers to you guys. But basically, if you look at the young adult cancer group, there's about 70,000 new young adults diagnosed a year. If you translate that to, I think like 44% of those are married. We're down into the 30,000s now. And about 10,000, so roughly 10,000 new young cancer widows and widowers each year. So in the grand scheme of things, while it's a large population spread over the United States, it's pretty small numbers. So finding someone, we've tried to get some groups together, and there just isn't the population in areas where you can get groups of young widows together or young cancer widows together. And so it's partly not talked about because up until recently the spouses have not been talked about or dealt with. But it's also partly because there's, the young adult group is small, the young adult spouse group is even smaller.
So I am really amazed by what you have set up. I think the website and the chat room and discussion board that you have is really important, because so many social networking and online media are important for this age group for the very reason that you stated, is that our numbers are small enough that to connect in a physical geographic location, we're few. But if you look at us nationally, there are more of us, and so connecting online is sort of the way to go. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about your discussion boards, the fact that they're password protected, and why you chose that. I think it's really a unique and incredible service that you're offering through that.
Yeah. So I view the spouse's role and the caregiver role as kind of like Windows on the computer. It's there. It has to be there for everything to run smoothly. And when everything works properly, you don't even know it's there to running the other programs. But when one little thing goes wrong, everything goes wrong. And you definitely know that something's wrong. So while the focus should definitely be on the patient, the spouse is also there as a primary caregiver, and they need to be taken care of too. But a lot of the issues that we have focus on the patient and how we get upset with the patient and we just need to vent. We get upset with the doctors, the in-laws, our own parents, our families, and we need a place to vent where those people can't easily take a look at it. And when we're not password protected, it's also partly because there's a whole lot of spammers out there that just put everything online. But it does have some confidentiality that there's been a few people who have said, I want to open up more, but I won't, or I'm afraid to because of the openness of this board. And so we're walking a fine line between being open and easily accessible versus having just anybody come on. So while we really focus on the spouses and the issues that the spouses have, I've had a few patients who have tried to join. I'd like to have them, but there are definitely places out there who would serve you better than we would, because we just don't focus on the patients.
I think it's fantastic that you provide a service that's just for the spouses. And I'm curious to know, what is the most heavily trafficked discussion on that board? What's the one that you find when spouses, and I also know that when you say spouses, it can be partners, or even if somebody's not married, but it's the partner of somebody who's going through this experience. What's the topic that seems to be getting the most hits and the most conversation?
Do you have the paper I sent you in front of you?
Not right in front of me right now.
Okay, because, I don't have it with me either, but there's like 10 topics that were our most 10 viewed topics. And they consist of the one that makes me laugh the most is the one that's titled "So This Abstinence Thing," and that's all about losing touch, losing physical and sexual and even some emotional touch with your spouse because of the cancer. And they're, forgive me for saying this, but we're young and we're horny. And sometimes we want to just be with our spouse. And there's it's both men and women on there who are saying this. And so that's a pretty popular one. There's also dealing with the in-laws and your family who just don't have a clue, and they think that you can just, that it's okay to just come visit you on the whim and to stay for 3 days and not really help because you're going to wait on them. So it's, there's a lot of topics that you just can't really discuss all that well, but it seems like the people that we get, a lot of them when they come to us, they're at their wit's end. And you can read it in their initial posts is that they don't know what to do next. They're at a loss for where to go and what to do, and if they can't vent, something's going to explode.
I need to step in there for a minute because we are running a little late, and I do want to get to Anya, and we have to play this song that her husband wrote. So I want to, Matt, stay on the line, but we want to bring Anya onto the show. I'm going to skip the song because this is kind of a somber topic, but I'd like to welcome to the show Anya Cohn-Mitten, who herself happens to also be a bereaved young adult spouse. Her husband, Michael, passed away, and she's going to tell us his story. But he happens to be an extraordinarily talented musician, singer-songwriter, and we are honoring him posthumously on the Volume 2 of the I'm Too Young for This Benefit CD. So please welcome to the show Anya Cohn-Mitten. Anya, you with
Hello.
Us? Hi.
I'm here. Hello.
Hi, Anya.
Hi. How's it going?
You're in good company tonight.
Welcome.
It's true. I am. I'm in very good company.
So I want to play Michael's song, which is called Dancing in the Sand. But
yes.
Tell us a little bit about him, his story, and how you got yourself wrapped up in this mess.
Well, actually, Michael and I were high school sweethearts, and the song Dancing in the Sand was actually written when we were, I had just graduated high school, and Michael was going into senior year of high school, and we were on vacation with our families in Myrtle Beach, and I was up early in the morning before anybody got up, and I was literally out dancing in the sand, and Michael came out to the deck and saw that and said that that was where the inspiration for the song came. And when Michael first got diagnosed, he was having reflexology done on his foot and just kind of touch massage therapy. And the massage therapist said, take yourself to a place that brings you peace and comfort and happiness. And Michael told me that that was the place that he went, was to watching me dance in the sand. So it's kind of how the story came about. And, Michael and I we're dating all through him having cancer. We're married 6 months before he passed. And, Michael was just an amazing individual. He was somebody that, you walked into the hospital room and the first words out of Michael's mouth were, how are you doing today? You know, he was a person that, just extraordinarily cared for everybody else more than himself, and I think that's what has inspired, me and has inspired what I'm doing and, getting myself through this and what I'm focusing my attention on now. And so he was just an amazingly talented person and beautiful person.
Well, I think that's the perfect segue into this cue here. The song is called Dancing in the Sand. Anya, what's the name of the album it's from?
The name of the album actually is Dancing in the Sand.
All right, the cover track to the song, cover track to the album Dancing in the Sand by Michael Minton. Here we go.
Thank you.
I gotta say, that was probably one of the more emotional moments we've had here on the Stupid Cancer Show, an extraordinarily breathtaking song. And, man, what an extraordinarily talented individual.
That was really, really good.
We have someone who called in, a dear friend of mine on the shows and the entire young adult cancer movement, the one and only Julie Larson from Cancer Care, Clinical Care Coordinator of all young adult programs. The all-seeing eye of the young adult support universe. Julie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for
having me. Hey, Julie, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I just basically, first I want to say hello to both Matt and who's the other guy? And Gail? I've never met you. I'm so glad to hear your voice and get to know you over the phone tonight.
Yeah, we have Anya and we have
Anya.
Matt.
Oh, Anya. Okay. Well, nice to meet you both. And Matt, I don't know if we've ever met in person, but I certainly know Young Cancer Spouse as well and refer many, many people to it. So thank you for joining up. Yeah, absolutely. I guess my main reason for calling tonight is just, you know, I've been listening and I want to second all of the comments that Matt's made about, and Anya have also talked about their own experiences of not only walking side by side with the person that they loved from diagnosis until the end of their life, but also the support needs that are distinct and that are unique as a young adult grieving a spouse. And if there are any people out there that are listening and in the New York City area and feeling alone and feeling like they're the only person out there that is going through this experience, at Cancer Care, I run a lot of different young adult groups, and one of those groups is a young adult spouse bereavement group. And I think that the resonating phrase that I often hear in my office is that, you know, it's just very complicated to understand that grieving process and all those what are very normal feelings but feel so abnormal and when you haven't experienced them before. And coming together with other people who get it can be incredibly reassuring. So whether it's on Matt's online group or whether you're in the New York area and would like more information in the face-to-face group we've got going, I just thought I'd put it out there.
Thank you, Julie. Can you send me some information on that?
Sure will, absolutely. And actually, I will connect with you as well because I'd like to know about your online groups as well for
okay.
people who can't make it in. So we will definitely connect. It is an isolated group.
Yes.
So that's basically why I wanted to call. And if you know if there's any more information that anybody listening would want about our groups and things in the New York area, they can certainly give me a call. My phone number is 212-712-6173, or go to our website, cancercare.org. So that's all. I just kind of wanted to do a shameless plug. but mainly for the purpose of gathering people together. And that's it's really not about me, but it's about finding a group that's meaningful and there's enough numbers for people to have a group that matters for them.
Well, Julie does like to hear her name mentioned on the air, too. So
that always feels good, Matt.
Yep.
So anyway, well, I will absolutely let you guys get back to the meatier conversation at hand, but just wanted to put that out there. And Matt, I will be in touch and we'll connect after the show.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Thank you all.
Thanks, Julie.
All right.
Julie Larson from Cancer Care, the one and only. Okay, Matt and Anya, we got about 5 minutes left. I want to give Anya just another chance to chime in on. I mean, I thought it was interesting that, Matt, you said you hadn't spoken to Anya. Is this the first time you're talking to her on the show tonight, or have you spoken up until this point?
This is the first time we've actually spoken, but Sarah entered a smart aleck comment I made on one of Sarah's posts on Facebook, and Anya jumped in, and Sarah introduced us, and so I am several times, but we've never actually spoken.
Yes.
Well, we're having a kindred moment then tonight on the Stupid Cancer Show with Matt and Anya meeting for the first time in virtual internet space.
Yes.
So, and Anya, we had the privilege of Stupid Cancerizing you at the Livestrong Summit in Columbus.
Yes, absolutely.
And converted you to our side of the Kool-Aid. And,
you did.
And,
what a good conversion that was. Too.
I was going to say, I'm really glad you're part of our team.
I don't remember any part
too.
Of that.
Yeah, Jack was drunk the whole time.
I knew there was something I liked about him.
But I'd like to give each of you a minute or two to close with some of your thoughts on, you know, what's out there, what are you still pissed at, what can be done, and what it is specifically that keeps you going, whether it's me personally because I'm so fabulous, or Jack because he's so drunk, or people like Julie that call in at random.
What show am I on again?
Yeah, this is Donahue.
Oh.
Okay. So, we'll let Matt go first.
Oh, in terms of what's out there, there's so much out there available for you. You just have to go find it. But the problem is knowing what you're looking for, knowing how to look at it. In terms of what's pissed me off is the fact that I have to do this, and anybody has to do this. But as a spouse, you need to take care of yourself. And it's so hard to want to do that because we're so guilt-ridden that we want to be the best caregiver we possibly can. And my wife deserves the best. She deserves everything. But you eventually get run down, and if you can't get off the couch or can't get out of bed, you're no good to anybody. And you're actually worse if you're depressed and can't get out of bed. So you're one more person to take care of. So you have to take care of yourself no matter what it is. For me, it was putting my efforts into building this website and this webpage, and that was my therapy. And so that kept me going. But you've got to find something that is your therapy, something that gets you out of the house, something, as we call it, GMOC, get mind off cancer. And
yep.
That's a good acronym. And the website is youngcancerspouses.org?
Yes.
That's pretty easy to spell, youngcancerspouses.org. Thanks, Matt, for being on the show. Anya, final words.
Yes. I agree with Matt. I think like Matt said, you really need to find an outlet. Find something that you can put some of yourself into, because so many times I think spouses tend to get lost. You're not the patient, and you're not the one getting the treatment and in and out of the hospital, but at the same time you are, because you're right there next to it, and when you're married, you're one with that person, and you are with that person. You go through everything that person goes through. So like he said, you need to take care of yourself too, and you need to find an outlet to take care of you. For me, that was writing, and I know a lot of people have shared that as well, but that's the strongest thing I can say, and even more so, it's just as important to do that afterwards. Everyone's going to have an opinion about how you should handle things afterwards, what you should do. Do what you need to do to take care of yourself and to make yourself better and to get on with your life in a positive way, and use your experience to help other people and help make the world a better place.
We have a saying here. We like to say get busy living, and I honestly believe that the two of you are the reason that we keep going on. You give us reason to get busy living by example. And I know no one would wish anything that happened to you to happen to anyone else and vice versa, but we're all in this together. The young adult movement stands apart by itself, with itself, and certainly not against itself. So I'd like to thank both of you for contributing to an extraordinarily special broadcast tonight on the realities of young adult survivorship when you are a bereaved spouse. So Matt Herrink and Anya Cohn-Minton, my apologies. Thank you for
drunk?
Being my guest. No, Jack's drunk.
Absolutely.
I'm getting a secondary high. Is that what it's called?
It's last call on the chemo deck.
Yes, absolutely. All right, guys. Enjoy yourselves. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll have you back in a couple of months.
All right. Thank you for having us. You're doing great work.
Have a great night.
Okay.
All right.
All righty. All right, Carol and Jack, thank you once again for being my trusty sidekicks and co-hosts and fabulosities. We'll see you back here next week, I guess, correct?
Great to be with you.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, guys, and now it's time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did poking a stick at Stupid Cancer. I'd like to thank my guests, Gail Baker, Matt Herring, and Anya Mitten-Cohn. Special shout out to my wife, whose birthday is tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Jess.
Happy birthday, Jessica. I love you. Next week, Healthy Living and Breast Cancer with author Karen Young of Healthier Eating and Living with Cancer and Gene Sachs, breast cancer advocate and chief executive officer of the Living Beyond Breast Cancer Coalition, and an opening by Craig Lustig from the Children's Cause for Cancer Advocacy about their Rise to Action conference in Los Angeles. Going to be a great show. See you here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. If you've missed any of our shows, go to stupidcancershow.com and download our archives, or go to iTunes and search for Stupid Cancer Show. We'll see you back here next week. Jack and Carol and I wish you all live from the Chemo Deck a phenomenal evening. Good night, folks.